Hello everyone, my name is Jacob Meg. I am the host of the Behavior Health Integration Podcast. Did you know that public speaking is one of the most fearful things a person can do? Today, my special guest will teach you all the tricks that you need to be competitive in public speaking, as well as comfortable in your own skin. Today, that special guest is Brendan. He is a public speaking coach. He has a strong passion in helping ambitious executives and coaches become top 1% communicators in their industries. He is also the host of the Master Talk YouTube channel. Brendan, it's a pleasure, man.
Likewise, Jacob. Such a pleasure to be on, brother.
So what's the weather like in Montreal right now?
Weather's good, actually. Usually in the winter, it's super cold. That's why I try and escape the winter. I just came back from Los Angeles.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, Florida too. So I'm going to Florida in a few weeks too. So I'm always trying to escape the winter. But now the winter is dwindling down, so the weather's much better.
Where in Florida are you going?
I'm going to Fort Lauderdale.
Okay. I was actually just in the Keys a few weeks ago with my family, and it was just beautiful.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, just right off the bat, man, you know, I've seen your YouTube videos and everything. Your promotions are awesome. And I just have to ask you, what originally got you into motivational speaking and coaching? Like, how did you find your passion in this?
Yeah, for sure, bro. So when I was in university, I went to business school and I did these things called case competitions. Okay. Think of it like professional sports, but for nerds. It's the only way to explain it. In a way people get it. So think of it like other guys my age are probably playing like basketball or football or soccer or something. Whereas what I was doing is I did presentations competitively. So believe it or not, Jacob, there's actually a lot of universities in the world who actually have students fly out to different countries around the world to give PowerPoint presentations. So a good example is the Gators at the University of Florida. Yep. They actually have a massive case competition program. Because nobody knows about it. If you're not in business school, it's not in the eco. Right. It's just really weird. So I lived in that world for like years. And what happened was as I was getting older, I started helping the younger ones on how to communicate because they wanted to do all these competitions too. But we didn't have a communication coach.
Okay.
And by the way, I wasn't one either. So I was just doing well at these competitions. I was just mentoring them for free. But that's how I started learning how to coach other people how to speak. So that when I was around 22 and I started working at IBM as a consultant post-grad, I had the idea for the YouTube channel because I realized that everything in my head wasn't on the internet for free. So I started making YouTube videos and it led to what it is today.
So elaborate a little bit, like how they even grade you in these competitions? Is it by the topic and your fluent speaking, or how does that work?
I love that, man. Very few people ask me that question, so I'm glad you have that curiosity.
Yeah.
So basically, let's start with the incentive. So why do these things exist, Jacob? So the reason they exist is because they're a feeder school for executives. So do you watch any sports like football?
Yeah.
Anything like that? Okay, yep. So let's say we take football as an example. So with the NFL, there's also the NFL draft. Right? Where a bunch of coaches, college coaches, they take their best guys and they take talent scouts out of across all the franchises in the NFL. They come, they watch the you know, people practicing, and then they draft the best guys into the league, right? So think of case competitions like the NFL draft for business executives.
Okay.
Right? So think of it like this. A lot of big companies like Walmart, like Nike, like Amazon, they spend tens of thousands of dollars sponsoring these competitions so they can be judges at them. They bring their own cases. So essentially what happens is, let's say Amazon brings a problem that they have in the business. They make a case out of it, like a 20-page document, and they go, okay, a bunch of students solve it. And whoever has the best solution wins the competition. So that's the preface. And the reason most of us competed in these things is because we wanted to get drafted in the NFL. It's just our version of the NFL was to get into the top companies in the world.
Yep.
So that most people go on to work at Wall Street. They go on to work at big management consulting firms and they become vice presidents and companies and make like $500,000 a year by the time like 30. So that's basically what the context to all of this is. So now it goes into your question. Now that we understand the context as to why these things exist, how do people get graded? So there's two parts. One part is the point that you mentioned. How do you present the ideas? So let's say team A, actually almost never do this in podcast. I'll do this in this one. So team A versus team B. Okay. This is something you used to tell students. So team A, let's say it's Walmart. Okay, so you got a bunch of Walmart executives. These are not store managers. Okay, no offense to the store man. These are like people who are really high up at Walmart, sitting down and watching 20-year-olds speak. Okay. So team A comes in and they might sound something like this. Hi, Jacob. My name's Brendan. It's great to present to Walmart. Obviously, they're like kids, right? They're like 20. They're nervous. So just the fact that they're there is a big difference. So what about team B? Team B, same age. Okay, they're like 20-year-old kids. I started doing this when I was 19. And they come up to the team and I coach them to say something like this. So they get up on the stage and then they go, "Ever since I was a kid, I always loved going to Walmart. The groceries, the video games, the toys, all of my favorite things were in this. And we're so excited to present to the board of directors of Walmart how you can take your strategy to the next level." So kids like this would present like that. So then the executives would be like, "Oh, wow, like this kid presents better than most of my executive team. Let's get
No-brainer.
this person a job." So yeah, that's the detailed answer to your question.
I like it though, because it just shows just confidence in your ability to speak and what you're actually knowledgeable about. Where, like, he's a person A, no offense, really nervous. I may have to check you for a pulse to see if you're alive, right? So I also have to ask you, have you ever thought of, or do you actually do coaching and consulting? Like, people come up to you and let's just say, man, I'm really petrified. I need to improve my speaking skills.
Absolutely, man. So what happened, I guess, to continue the timeline is I started working at IBM and then I started Master Talk with the YouTube channel. But then a few months after that, what happened, because I quit corporate a long time ago, is I actually developed a coaching business accidentally. Because as my YouTube channel was doing this, a lot of executives started reaching out and they said, "Hey, do you like do coaching?" So I started to coach a lot of these top executives, and that's how I built a business around it. So yes, most of the way that I pay the bills is definitely coaching. YouTube is more of my give back to the community. So people who can't afford me, I come on podcasts like this, share information for free, or people can check out the YouTubes for free. Yeah.
So is that like the biggest population you work with, or do you ever just work with high school, college kids who are, again, just doing college presentations and just want to improve on that?
Oh yeah, I definitely do a lot of pro bono for high school and college, but I usually don't charge those that community. So what I do with them, which is like what most people do, is they attend my I do a free training every few weeks that people can register for. It's at rockstarcommunicator.com. And basically everyone's invited to that. So what I do with the high schoolers that reach out to me and the college students is I just recommend videos. And from time to time, I do this with a couple of universities. I just speak for free. Like I don't charge those kids. I think it's more like the people at the top that I charge, like managers and above.
Do you ever like have those special moments where you see a kid that kind of reminds you of you growing up and you want to help him out?
Yes, there are a lot of cool questions there. I love that. It's absolutely, absolutely. And the reason is because a lot of people helped me. Right. Like when I was younger, the only reason I matured really quickly, like I probably started coaching execs when I was 22, I'm 25 currently. And the reason I matured so fast, because yeah, my average client's like double my age, right? Almost like 40s, 50s. It was because of guys like Lewis Howes, guys like Gary Vaynerchuk, right? They started sharing a lot of information for free when they didn't have to. And back when I couldn't afford, obviously I spend a lot of money on myself now in personal development programs, all that stuff. But back then, I was a broke student like all of us were. So I was listening to a lot of this free content. So yes, it definitely feels good to return the favor in an area that I don't think not many people are really working in. And it's always great to see what people can do with it. I would say the kids that have excited me the most personally in the journey are really the tech kids, the people who are building really big companies like technology startups, but they're like 20 years old, 19 years old. And a lot of them use my YouTube videos to develop their pitches to go raise $500,000 of capital. So that I always brightens my day. I see all these superstars doing big works. So yeah, it's super fun.
So another thing too, I really want to add. So I guess I had my own fear of speeches when growing up too. In high school, I kind of got by, but I was just absolutely just petrified. And this is crazy. One time, I think it was like the middle of my first year in college. It was like a history class, whatever, and it was a decent sized class for me. I think at least 50, 60 students. I swear to God, like the last project I did not do out of fear of speaking. And I literally took a zero for that project because I was too afraid to speak in front of the class.
Thank God I still passed, but it was just, I don't know, it's just funny to think back on where I am now compared to then. So just asking you, like, what are the biggest fears people express to you when it comes to public speaking?
Dude, I love that vulnerability. Thanks for sharing,
Yeah,
Jacob.
of course.
And super, I'm glad you asked the question, 'cause like, by the way, I'm no exception to the rule. Like, people think I'm some great speaker. I'm literally coming to you live from my mother's basement. Okay, like I started mass talk on the couch in my mom's basement. So trust me, I get it. And the other piece as well to my story that's worth mentioning for the audience. I grew up in a city called Montreal, and in Montreal, you need to know how to speak French. So my parents sent me to French school, but here's the dealio: I didn't know how to speak French. So my whole life, not only was I scared of presentations like most of us are, I presented in a language I didn't even know,
Oh
brother. So
man, I can't imagine.
yeah, it was crazy, man. It was absolutely nuts. So trust me, I'm super empathetic to this. So let's dive in a bit deeper, because I think this will help us illuminate a couple of things. So let me start by saying something controversial, which is the fear of communication is not your fault. And I'll explain why. Okay, let's think about this. If we go back to did we start learning how to speak? Where did those habits start? That's where the answer comes in. So let's say we take football as well, since you watch football. Okay, so what does our childhood look like around football? Okay, it's watching the games with our parents, yelling at the Super Bowl, playing with our friends. These are memories that we enjoy, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. It makes
Correct.
sense. So when we grow into adults, or mini adults in our case, right, we like football. It's fun. We go to the Super Bowl. We yell at Tom Brady. Like, it's fun. It's good. But the same thing does not apply to public speaking. We don't wake up one morning and say, "Hey, Jacob, do you want to get breakfast and present all day?" Says nobody ever. In fact, 100% of all the presentations that we've given in our lives that were either in school and work, which is where we learned the habit, going back to the childhood phase, have three commonalities. Number one, 100% of those presentations are mandatory, right? They're not optional, right? Going back to the analogy from before, we don't wake up in the morning and eat breakfast and present all day. Nobody does it. It's forced. We're in school, it's graded, we have to get it done. That's the first piece. The second problem with all of those presentations, 100% of them, almost all of them, is that they're always different. So when you're playing football and you're practicing with your friends, you might be crap at the beginning, I still am. But what happens is the next day when you practice, you get better. Why? Because the game is the same. Like, you don't have a different ball every day, it's the same ball. And over time, you just get better with your pigskin football and your throwing, and you get better. But in presentations, one presentation is never given twice, because you're switching from history to sciences to math to French to English, and you're always in this stressful situation where you're preparing five or seven presentations at the same time. So that's problem number two. And then problem number three, which is the most important one, by the way, is that every presentation is tied to a punishment. So it's never, "Hey, Jacob, what are you excited about, man? Do you like football? Do you like podcasts? Do you want to give a presentation? Are we all going to clap for you? Hey, everyone, let's all clap for Jacob." Unfortunately, that's not how the education system works. It's, "Jacob, I need you to talk about Shakespeare." And you're like, "Shake what now? Like, who am I shaking?" And then I have to give a presentation. So let's recap all this. I'll throw it back to you. 100% of all the presentations we give in our life are mandatory. They're always different, so we never get better. And they're tied to a punishment. So does the fear of communication make sense? Absolutely, right? We see it as a chore. It's like washing the dishes. So it's kind of like we played football. If I was throwing a football at your face every time you miss, would you like football? Probably not. So that's the main issue.
Well, it's that external stimuli where it's just like nothing's guaranteed and is judged by other people. So you're forced to do something you may not want to do. And then you could also have the fear of getting a bad grade for not doing a good job. Yeah, just,
Absolutely.
And it's funny just going back to my original situation where I actually took a zero. I think that was somewhat of a powerful moment for me because I told myself, like I'm not gonna ever do that again. Like I gotta do something different. So I think it was the next semester, it was another history related class, and I had a huge presentation, but I just had the confidence of, okay, I don't wanna, let's say, go out like that or have that same experience. So for me, in that one moment, I just practiced a whole bunch. I wrote my content down over and over again, and I practiced multiple times after time. You know, and I spoke in front of the mirror, or I constantly just like said it to myself, redid the speech. And the next day when I had to do it, I did a much better job. Let's just say that it was more fluent, and I had a like real sense of confidence to myself, you know, after I did that.
I love that, man. That's a beautiful mm-hmm. story. But I think the bigger point, and awesome that you're able to overcome the fear, is like, dude, if someone just came up to you when you were younger and just said, hey, Jacob, why don't you give a presentation about football or something that you love? It doesn't matter. Yeah. And let's not count it for grades. Let's just encourage you. Let's clap regardless of what it sounds like. We wouldn't have the problem in the first place. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about this.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. So getting back to, I guess, the career aspect of it, would you ever have issues coaching with someone? Because I remember I think you posted an article on feedback that I really liked, and it's how you have to give feedback to different people when you're coaching them. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Absolutely, brother. Mm-hmm. So the way that I think about feedback, it's like a thermometer. Right. So the way that we give feedback to somebody like Elon Musk is going to be very different to a 7-year-old girl. Mm-hmm. So with a 7-year-old girl, even if you might have a lot of let's take communication as an example here, even if she might have some things to improve on, she's 7. She's just getting started. We both know that the right approach is probably not, OK, Sally, these are the 17 things you need to work on. You need to get better. Mm-hmm. Probably not the right approach. It's probably saying something like, hey, Sally, you have such a beautiful smile. How about you just smile and share that with the world a bit more? Since she gets red in the face, she goes, yes, he's right. And then she gets the confidence. Whereas with somebody like Elon, if I said that to him, he'd slap me in the face. He'd be like, what the hell are you talking about? So instead, with Elon, it's more like, okay, Elon, these are the 17 points that I feel are missing in the bottom line. This is how it's impacting the team. This is how it's impacting the culture. And this is what will happen if you don't change. And Elon goes, I love it. I agree with 14 of these points. Let's move forward with strategy.
So it's not like being a yes man. Sometimes you have to give the hard truths to, again, let's say that business executive adult, right? Compared to like a little girl or boy or teenager.
Absolutely. I would say another way of phrasing what you said, which I agree with as well, definitely yes men is not going to help, is regardless of who you're speaking to, Jacob, I always like preparing the worst type of feedback. So I'll give you an example. Let's say you were my client, okay? It's super random. And I have, let's say, 50 items. Let's say a feedback, or maybe 3, right? Whatever, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. What will happen is, based on the way we're interacting, I'm going to make a decision in my mind on whether or not I show 50 things or 3 things to you based on how you're receiving that feedback. But if you're someone, which you are, who is someone who's super open to feedback and resilient, mm-hmm. but I don't have 50 points for you, I only got 3, you won't respect me, because you'll be like, hey man, I'm looking for the harsh feedback. Why do you only have 3 points for me? Right. Like, I thought you were going to give me a lot more. So regardless of who we're speaking to, even the 7-year-old girl, I'll still write down 30 points of feedback in my mind. But, big but, I will never share all 30. I'll share 1 of the 30. Right? So that's the key. It's about always conditioning ourselves to write something really harsh about someone, and harsh as in all the points of improvement that we see. But then filtering that piece of paper based on who we're speaking to. And one easy way we can filter this, Jacob, this is what I do, mm-hmm. is I always call it ranking feedback. Focus on the easy wins first. So whenever you have a list of feedback points, what a lot of people do is they vomit all of the feedback onto people, which is the wrong way of approaching it. Like, think about like a good example that we see a lot in culture is relationships. Oh, I hate that my wife does this. Oh, I hate my husband does this. Not encouraging. Okay, if you're going to live with them for 50 years, probably not the right approach.
Correct.
Right? So instead, what you want to think about, or what we want to think about, is out of all of these 50 points that we might have for a significant other or business partner, the people, what is the easiest thing to implement on this list? So now what you're doing is you're ordering the feedback by easiness. Mm-hmm. So instead of me, let's say you ask me for feedback at the end. Obviously, I'm just mentioning this because you asked me the question.
Yeah, like, how did I do, man? You know.
Right. So let's say you asked me that. So instead of going through, okay, let's spend 45 minutes. Let me just discourage you because we just started a podcast. No, it's like you just got started in podcasting. Right. I would probably say something like, okay, here's one thing I would work on. I would listen to this episode of this other podcast who broke down the art of this, and then I would read this one article. And then only if you implement all three, let's say you follow up and you go, hey, Brent, I implemented, what's next? Then I'll go to the 4, 5, 6.
Okay.
And then I'll keep leveling up. And the perspective here that I'd love to share, excuse me, is hard feedback is never given, it is earned. Okay, hard feedback is never given, it is earned. Never give all your energy to someone who's not implementing. Start with the easy stuff first, see if they're implementing, and if they are, then go hardcore on them.
So if they're, let's say, making good eye contact when you're giving them this, and they seem engaged, would that be an example of that? And absolutely. Then you go on from there? Okay.
Yeah. And it's going to look different for everything, right? So to your point, yeah, with communication might be something easy, like smile a bit more in your presentation, eye contact, things like that. But as you're getting that right, you level that up. But that's also true with life. That's also true with health. Every other area, the same rationale would apply.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that too. Have you ever heard of this thing called the Johari window? So it's like an interpersonal communication model. And I won't go through like everything, but they got like an open window and a blind window, right? And it's just based on you and your interaction with like other people. So one part of the window is like you're open. So that's like everything people know about you and you know about yourself. And then there's another window called the blind window again, where people know something about you that you don't know about yourself. So again, that's going back to that feedback portion that we were just talking about, where let's say in the work environment or even the coaching, when there's this type of behavior that you're kind of like displaying to other people, but you're not seeing it. You know, maybe it's that uncomfortable thing that people don't want to come to you about. And here's a little funny story. That's why I tell my clients when I'm doing like group therapy and everything. It's like the alligator story. So let's say the alligator's in the swamp, right? And we all know alligators are green, just right off the bat. But this alligator's chilling in the swamp, and this one frog says, hey, dude, you got a purple tail. And the alligator's just like, screw you, dude. No, I don't. So then that's one person, right? Well, let's just say that's one person or thing. Now, the next day, two frogs say to the alligator, hey, dude, you got a purple tail. And he's like, no, you guys are idiots. I don't, whatever. Now, that's two people saying that one thing about you. Does that make it true? Maybe, maybe not. They just may not like you or whatever. They're just, I don't know, think you're annoying. But let's say the next day you got four frogs saying, dude, you got purple tail. Does that necessarily mean it's true?
No, but it increases the likelihood.
Yes, it increases the likelihood of it. And it makes you think, are these people just doing this to be rude to me? Or are they actually trying to help me? So then it forces or increases that alligator's chances of actually looking to see if he has that purple tail. And in doing that, you need to be able to accept feedback from others. So again, that's a way of, again, increasing communication and awareness amongst each other and working together as a team too.
I love that. That's a cool
one. No, yeah, I just found that very interesting too, because sometimes when you're communicating too with like your client, I'll just compare it to like my job too, when I work with my staff. Have you ever heard of like the sandwich approach too?
Yeah, positive, negative, positive.
Yep. So then you're giving them like positive feedback. Hey, you know, you're kind of doing this really well, but hey, can you try to work on this? But hey, keep doing great in this and et cetera. So, okay. So I want to ask you another thing too. When it comes to coaching people in public speaking, do you also add in like other things that are like, hey, like what are like some positive qualities of life that can help you? Let's say if like they're coming to you, right, and they need help public speaking, would you also encourage them about other avenues that can help you in your life
rather than work? Question. Absolutely. So you, basically what I got from your question is like, is there areas of life that we cover outside of communication?
Yes.
That the person is looking at? Absolutely. So here's the way that I break it down, Jacob. Tony Robbins explains this best, so I'll just take from his words, which is we're either trying to do two things as human beings. We're either trying to run away from pain or one towards pleasure, right? So whether running away from pain or running towards something that we really want. So communication is always a byproduct of something else. So communication itself is not something people necessarily want. It's the outcome that communication brings that what people want. So I'll give an example. Mm-hmm. It's not about communicating better. It's about having a better relationship with my wife. It's not about communicating better. It's about making more money at my job. It's not about communicating better. It's about getting into a leadership position. It's not about communicating better. It's about starting a business, right? So there's always a layer behind that leads someone to want to be a better communicator. And that layer is not just about comms. So when you figure out what that layer is, you can then start coaching around that layer. So I'll give you an example. One question that I ask people to think about, and this is how I start all of my process, is how would your life change if you're an exceptional communicator? Most of communication, going back to what we talked about earlier, right, is stemmed in negativity. The fear, the stress, the anxiety. I hate that approach. That's actually the biggest thing I disagree with in my industry. It's like, yeah, sure, it might sell you coaching packages, but it doesn't help people. Whereas for me, it's more about, let's dream a little. You know, we dream about our vacations. We dream about the expensive cars we want to buy, maybe the NFL game we want to watch. Mm-hmm. But we don't dream about, you know, maybe our team getting to the Super Bowl one day. But the thing we never dream about is how great our communication skills could be. So when we start to imagine that, we start to picture a better life for ourselves, and you can coach around that.
I think that's so cool that you said this, because in the therapy world, there's this thing called the miracle question. You heard of that? So you're going to sleep one night, right? And this boom, this miracle just happens. You don't know how it happened or why it happened, but it happened. So you wake up and your life is just like perfect. You're happy and you have the life you want to be. Well, what I'll do for my clients is like, how would you even know if it happened? Like when you wake up, like how would you even know if you had the perfect life and then all your negative issues are just gone? So I just loved how you just mentioned, like, if I was a tremendous communicator, how would different aspects of my life be different? So I thought that was very powerful.
Dude, likewise. I never heard of the miracle question before. It's really mm-hmm. cool.
It's weird because it sounds so easy, but it's so hard for people to like really grasp their minds around.
Mm.
Especially if you've gone through like a lot of struggle in your life, it's really hard for you to get into that mindset of, oh, miracle, there's no such thing as a miracle. I don't even want to do this. But then like when you mentioned just now being a great communicator, I kind of thought about my life and how much it would be better. I mean, my personal life would probably be a lot better. My relationships with my family would be better. My work relationship with people and my counselors, the people that I work with, would be a lot better. I'd be probably less stressed out. They'd be less. So it opened a lot of great avenues. It really did.
Love that.
So another thing I want to kind of get into too, man, do you have any big passion projects coming up, or is there anything that you want to take further in your communication public speaking career?
Yeah, I would say for me, man, I'm a big believer in focus. Mm-hmm. So the only passion project for me, and I guess this is what makes me boring, is I spend most of my time just building Master Talks. So that means the YouTube channel,
yep.
Guesting on shows, making better content for people, making better content for coaching clients, and attending live events, going to conferences, learning new stuff from other coaches so I can bring it back into my game and the sport I'm playing. Mm-hmm. So all of my focus is really just on that. But I would say for me, what I'm super excited about is what will happen at scale. Like I remember 3 years ago when I met my business partner, it was probably September 2019. So I started MasterTalk, the YouTube channel, in Jan of 2019. Okay. And I remember when I met him, I had like 1,000 subscribers. None of my mm-hmm. content was professionally produced. So I was just some kid in a basement, my mom's basement, making videos. And it's crazy what has happened in 3 years. I mean, it's only been 2-3 years now. It's been 3 years since the YouTube channel started, and it's been almost 3 since I met my business partner. And now mm-hmm. look at where we're at. So I'm excited, man, for the next 5-10 years. It's going to be pretty sick.
I think that's so cool that you mentioned that, because as you mentioned me, my podcast, I just started my podcast like last June. And I know a lot of people can like go through discouragement and everything too, because you kind of get into it not really knowing what to expect, but you kind of hope for like great things. And then when you don't really get the amount of downloads you like or the views, you kind of, again, get into a down mood, right? And
absolutely. Yeah.
Would you say, like, what do you think are, like, some of the main characteristics you need to make in this business? And that's, like, YouTubing, podcasting, public speaking.
Yeah, man. I would say for me, the biggest mistake content creators make is they don't think about their personal brand in decades, but rather days. So most people, they just go, what's hot? TikTok's hot, man. Like LinkedIn, it's hot. If you're not on LinkedIn, and then next week it's the next hot thing. Whereas what most people don't spend enough time thinking about is, who do I want to be in 10 years? Mm-hmm. What do I want my brand to be in 10 years? What do I want it to look like? How do I want it to feel? What type of impact do I want to make? And when you start thinking about your personal brand 10 years from now, the decisions that you'll make as a content creator will change dramatically, because most podcasts fail in 6 months. Most YouTube channels fail in 3 months or 4 months. Most anything content really fails, not just because of, you know, lack of talent, but mostly lack of consistency. That's where the failure happens. So for me, when I thought about MasterTalk, even if I honestly thought it was a stupid idea when I started it, the one thing I do give myself credit for is I think in decades, Jacob. So for me, let's say we take YouTube as an example. Mm-hmm. I realized when studying a bunch of YouTubers that if you post once a week, you can make it.
At
the minimum. You can post more than once a week, but if you post once a week and it's gold every single time, you could build a pretty good following. So I looked at that statistic and I was like, okay, so if I do once a week for 10 years, I'll win. And I looked at the numbers and I was like, yeah, pretty sure I'll win. So that's 520 videos, mm-hmm. right? 52 weeks a year times 10 years. So I wrote 200 of them, right? I currently have my content done until end 2020. So I'm currently writing 2024 right now. Wow. That's how obsessed I am. So notice I don't care about trending topics. I don't care about what's hot. All I'm thinking about is, like, if I post one gold YouTube video every single week for the next 10 years, I'm currently 25. When I'm 35, I'll have one of the biggest YouTube channels in public speaking. That's already starting to come true. Because even at the count I'm at right now, because my niche is so small, there's not a lot of people create content in my niche.
Yeah.
I'm already starting to get the recognition, but I'm only 3 years into this game and I'm still fairly young. So that's the way I think about it. That's the advice I have for people, Jacob. So same thing with podcasting, right? Don't think about 1,000 followers. Don't think about 1,000 downloads. Think about 1,000 conversations. Okay. Like, let's have a fun, let's actually make this a bit meta. Why did I come on this podcast? Right?
Good question.
Right? Why am I here? Like, there's no, like, the podcast just started. What? And I'll tell you exactly why, Jacob. Because I always want to have a conversation. I don't care about the downloads that much. Not yet. I've gone on some pretty big shows, but I'm just saying that so people can understand it. Because I like giving real answers. The reason is because I'm always fascinating people who are fascinating in me, because there's always something I'll learn. So for example, when you sent me a big lengthy message, hey, I really like your stuff, blah, blah, blah. I didn't care about the downloads. I was like, let's get on this conversation because there's something I'm going to learn from Jacob. Because I want to understand, why does Jacob care to have me on his show? Why does he care about my topic? So I'm spending that hour, even if I know that it won't, like, I won't make $1 million, right? Mm-hmm. But it's not about that. It's about the decade play. So I've already learned so many things, right, that I have in my mental game. Miracle questions. You do group therapy.
Yeah.
You're talking about health. You're asking me a lot of questions about case comps. Nobody does. So it's those insights. It's being very meticulous about your audience. It's those conversations. You do this 1,000 times, you'll be a big name.
Mm-hmm.
Right, in anything that you do, and that's really the signature Gary Vaynerchuk. It's just a lot of people don't realize how he started this game. And he still does this even now, right?
That's cool.
You need to be willing to have those one-on-one conversations, regardless of how big you are. And the second you think you're top shit is the day you lose.
And I love the humbleness too. Is what I love and appreciate, the humbleness of helping, like, the people that are starting up. You know. Because again, eventually, I'm going to get into a different, like, aspect about this, but let's say you work at a company, right? And you're like this older CEO guy, and you know most of the information, whatever, you're humble, you're not going to just, like, be ignorant and just take that knowledge yourself. You're going to want to pass it down to the next person, so then they can take over and help make your company even better when you're gone. I think it's just a transition in life that we all have to go through to pass on our knowledge to the next generation, the one after that, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, that's a beautiful thing. It really is. And and I just want to say, man, I greatly appreciate you giving me a chance and you being on my podcast. It was a great honor, man. It really was.
You know, it's funny people say that, man. It always makes me feel uncomfortable because I'm always like, I'm not really that big of a deal. I just answered it that way because I feel it really helps people understand what it really takes. Because, mm-hmm. you know, if you want to do this as long, you really actually do have to care.
You do.
Like, you can't bullshit this industry. Like, you could do it for, like, maybe a year, but, like, doing it for 3 or 5 or 7 or 9, you have to genuinely like talking to people that you don't know, right?
And you got to put in the work, too. You got to put in the work. Like, I'm constantly on podcast episodes on for beginner podcasters because I want to learn. I want to get better at my craft. I want to get better with interview guests. And you just got to put that effort in. I don't know if this is exact on this research, but they say we're talking about like podcasters like quitting, like, well, it's called pod fading, I guess. Have you heard of that term?
Correct.
A huge percentage drop off at 3 episodes. And I'm just thinking too, I wonder what that's about, because I kind of put myself in their shoes. And again, it's maybe unrealistic expectations. I want to make money right away. And through my experience, that just does not happen. But
absolutely. And to build on that, and you're someone who's studied a lot of the psychology, so I'm sure you can relate. You know, human beings love to start things, but they hate finishing them. You know, they love starting a marriage. Hey, I'm getting engaged. Everyone's celebrating. Hey, I'm starting a new job. Everyone's going crazy. Hey, I'm starting this new podcast. Human beings love starting things, but they hate finishing them. Right? They hate it. All right? And the point that you made around pod fading, and I'm sure you know this too, is that applies for everything.
Yeah.
Right. It's like we're always trying to start things, but we're not actually paying attention to our life in full, which is like, what do I want my legacy to be at the end of this game? So where should I actually be prioritizing my time, focusing my time? Like, this is an excellent use of my time because it's leading towards where I want to be, which is, how do I become the best thought leader in my industry? Well, the only way to do this is to have more conversation with guys like Jacob, because he's going to ask me questions I didn't think of. And I'm always going to learn something new. So that makes sense for the craft I'm building. But if I wanted to be an actor, it wouldn't make any sense.
Right.
I should be like on movie sets. I should be on, I don't know, doing something, running after auditions. Yep. I know what actors do, but that's the key, right? It's about really prioritizing what we want. And then once we figure that out, we win. And what I've learned in the content creation brain, bring you back to your last question, is that the number one differentiator between the best content creators on the planet and everyone else is they make their fans feel like superstars. So when you take that time to spend 45 minutes with each one individually, this is what Gary Vee did over like, what, 13 years when he made his first jab, and he talked about V Friends, and he said, this is the first time I'm asking for something. He sold $90 million of product in like 3 months. Right. So that's the game. You give so much because you've had those one-on-one conversations. People don't even care. Dude, let me actually explain, because I think it's funny. Yeah. Like, Gary Vee once, okay, I like mentioning it because I think he's a fun example for all of us. Mm-hmm. 8 months ago, he had a 24-hour stream. It was like for one day. And he said, if you buy 12 copies of my book, I'll give you a surprise and I won't tell you what the surprise is. So he kept saying it. And I bought 12 books.
Wow.
Like, it's crazy. You don't even know what the surprise is. You don't know what you're getting, because there's so much trust that is built into that. Yeah. And that's really what it takes to win in that sport. In the same way that in football, the game is practice every day, drill, work with your team. In this game, in the content creation game, the drill is have the conversations one-on-one with people at scale.
Absolutely. Being consistent, man. It's true. It is true. Well, hey, man, before we head out, Bartha, if any of my listeners want to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do that? Through email, website?
Absolutely, man. Well, first of all, thanks for the awesome questions, Jacob. A lot of people don't ask me a lot about case competition. Always
my pleasure.
Absolutely, man. So there's two ways to connect. The first one is the YouTube channel. So you can type Master Talk in one word. You have access to all my free videos there. And if you want to get in touch with me for coaching, I always recommend to come to our free trainings. So you can register for that at rockstarcommunicator.com. It's a free Zoom call. It's every 3 weeks. It's not a webinar. It's live. It's interactive. I'm coaching people on the call for free. So you can go to that and check it out.
And I will also put that information on my show notes as well to all my listeners. So don't worry. It'll be linked up.
Of course.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Great knowledge. Great information.
Likewise, man. Thanks for the time.
Yep.
I just want to thank all my great BHI listeners for another wonderful episode. Again, I just want to inform everyone and all my listeners that the content of this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you find yourself struggling with any type of mental health or addiction issue, please seek the care of a licensed professional counselor or a licensed medical doctor. All right, thank you and have a good day. Bye.